Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks, and we'll begin today with a look at growing income and wealth disparity in Boston. It's a major theme of the presidential campaign, and it's part of the focus this week of a national conversation called A Nation Engaged, which WBUR is participating in with other NPR member stations, exploring the challenge of creating economic opportunity for more Americans. So when it comes to the wealth gap here in Greater Boston, it is amplified in a big way by race. So let's explore that a bit. Last June, we asked this question about Boston. How is it that a city with one of the country's most robust economies is also the American city with the highest rate of income inequality? In that story, we met Janine Skinner, who'd made a successful transition from welfare to work. But she told us about her struggles and about one of the major goals for her family, a kitchen table.
People don't realize, people in my situation, we don't have. You know, I come to work with people that probably make, you know, great money and have beautiful homes, and I go home where we sit on the floor. So this is something that I think is a very, sorry, I'm getting emotional. Yeah. You know, so have a place for me and my family to sit and eat dinner together every night.
After hearing that story, WBUR listeners reached out to Janine Skinner and bought her a kitchen table, even helped her pay some of her bills. Things have improved in other ways for Skinner and her husband. Now they both have stable jobs with a nonprofit in Boston. And Skinner hopes to start her own nonprofit, which she wants to call the Kitchen Table, to help others transition from welfare to work. But she says she and her husband are still a long way from a key piece of the American dream.
Currently, we're looking to buy a home, and it is quite a struggle across the board.
A struggle because Boston has some of the highest housing prices in the country. And because when times were tough, Skinner and her husband relied on credit cards to pay their bills and fell behind. Skinner also has more than $30,000 in student loans, so their credit score is too low to qualify for a mortgage.
We are both weren't educated on the importance of having a higher credit score. So we are diligently working on, you know, paying off past due balances. So it has been very difficult.
Skinner, who is African American, and her husband, who's the son of Haitian immigrants, are still struggling to make it in a city with a dramatic racial disparity in wealth. So says Patricia Munoz, an assistant vice president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, and the author of a recent report, The Color of Wealth in Boston.
And when you get deeper into the data, you really realize that the racial differences and ethnic differences are immense, especially in the Boston metro area.
Munoz found a widening wealth gap along racial lines. Among the key findings, white households have a median net worth, that's the value of their assets minus their debts, of about $250,000. The median net worth of black households, almost zero. The report also found that black households, like Janine Skinner's, have much more debt than white households. And almost 80% of white families own a home, while just a third of black families do. Munoz says that means blacks have much less ability than whites to pass wealth on to their children, perpetuating the racial wealth gap.
It's really the money that's passed down from generation to generation. So whites are more likely to get help to buy a house or more likely to get help to pay for education. And so then you see the cumulative consequences reflected in that number.
By contrast, consider the experience of Seti Warren, who inherited his home in the wealthy town of Newton.
I think about my story and how fortunate I've been because there's no way my wife and I would be able to afford to live in that house right now if not for the intergenerational transfer of our home.
Warren is not just a fortunate homeowner in Newton. He's the mayor and he's African American. And he's keenly aware of the racial wealth gap and how few blacks are in his position. Warren's father was a Korean War vet who bought the family home with the help of the GI Bill.
This idea that if you work hard, you're able to take care of yourself and you're able to ensure that your child's life will be better off than yours. That story is something that we're losing.
Home ownership is the major way families pass on and build wealth. But in Massachusetts, if you're not white, chances are your family doesn't own a home. Statewide, almost 70% of white families own their own homes, but less than a third of Black, Latino, and Asian families do. Here's Tom Callahan, executive director of the Massachusetts Affordable Housing Alliance.
That is the second widest gap in the nation. That surprises some people because we feel like we're a progressive state with progressive policies around housing. And we are in a lot of ways, but the homeownership gap has been stubbornly large and actually in recent years has even widened slightly.
To address that gap, Callahan favors federal, state, and local policies to build more middle and low-income housing units, among other policies. He says that would help close the housing gap and that yawning wealth gap, which the Boston Fed calls a public policy challenge requiring immediate attention. Well, joining us now to talk more about the homeownership gap and how it contributes to the wealth gap in Boston is Barry Bluestone. He's professor of political economy at Northeastern University and the founding director of the Dukakis Center for Urban and Regional Policy. And Barry, it's always great to have you. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Nice to be back, Anthony.
So, first of all, talk a little bit about how closely linked this homeownership gap is with this dramatic wealth gap that we were just hearing about.
Well, it actually runs both ways. Because there's such a big income gap between whites and others in our community, the chances of home ownership, of course, are going to be much lower for people with lower income, and that's disproportionately people of color. Hmm. However, it runs the other way. That is, the major form of wealth that people hold in this country, with the exception of the very, very wealthy, is their homes. In my generation, and I'm going to be 72 this year, you bought your home when you were young, you watched it appreciate in value, and that was part of your retirement asset that you used. So the problem is that the income gap leads to differential homeownership gap, and the differential homeownership gap then leads to even greater wealth inequality from generation to generation.
Mm. And I imagine as well that when we talk about a wealth gap and a homeownership gap along racial lines, that some of the policies of the past have had an effect as well. That is, we lived through a period in this country where there were discriminatory policies around housing, around mortgage lending. There has to be a legacy to that as well, right?
Absolutely. I grew up in the city of Detroit in the boom days, but a highly segregated Detroit. And what happened in the 1950s and 60s is that white families were able to move to the suburbs. And they bought homes, some of them on the GI Bill, and then they watched them appreciate dramatically. Black families had trouble moving to the suburbs, and often because of racial covenants or just because of antagonism. So they stayed in the city, and if they could afford to buy a home, they did. But prices in the city have fallen for homes. And so while the value of the assets went up in the suburbs for whites, the value of the home assets for blacks in the city fell. Hmm. It also meant that there'd be differentials in the ability to fund schools, and this led to all kinds of problems. So again, initial differences in segregation, initial differences in income lead to this tremendous difference in home ownership and assets.
Hmm. We heard from Tom Callahan in the report we just heard, the executive director of the Massachusetts Affordable Housing Alliance, and says one of the big keys in closing this gap in home ownership is to build more middle income and affordable housing units. Is that a good place to start? Is he right?
He's absolutely right, but unfortunately, trying to build housing for working families and middle-income housing, particularly in the greater Boston area, is virtually impossible.
Why is that?
The cost of building has just gone through the roof. The cost of land, the soft costs of meeting regulations, construction costs. Last year's Greater Boston Housing Report Card that we released with the Boston Foundation showed that the average cost per square foot of building housing is now $276 a square foot. That means if you built a triple-decker, let's take the one that Ted Williams lived in when he returned from World War II in Alston, Brighton. That simple triple-decker with three units of 1,200 square feet each would cost over $1 million today. Mm. So what we're seeing is that developers, of course, have been building luxury housing, and we've probably may even have a surplus of that now. Some of them can build highly subsidized housing for the very poor. But we have no way of building housing for working families and middle-income families. And so, one, they can't get into the home ownership market. Two, it forces rents through the roof. And three, we're now seeing more and more of those families having to move further and further away from the city, central city of Boston, into the suburbs. And not surprisingly, that's leading to tremendous transportation problems and congestion.
Sure.
So one problem leads to another, leads to another.
So what's the solution? I mean, I know these are problems that have, as we've been suggesting, have been sort of compounded generation over generation. But where do we need to go? And if we don't address this, where does this take us?
Well, one thing that I've been talking with a lot of people about is trying to find a way to do what I call housing jujitsu. And what I meant by that is, if we can't build housing for working families, perhaps there's housing that's appropriate for them. Think about the 40% of all our units that are triple-deckers. But most of those, or many of those units, have been taken over by millennials, by my graduate students at Northeastern, by interns and residents at MGH. I'd like to see us build housing that would be more appropriate for them. Call them millennial villages or startup villages that Mass Challenger would want to do, or an artist village that Boston Conservatory is talking about. If we could build that kind of housing, we could open up some of the older housing, we could renovate it, and it would go back to the working families that housing was originally built for when we had the large immigrant flows at the end of the 19th and early 20th century. So given the high cost of housing construction, and I don't see that coming down, we have to try some other kind of trick to make that work. And then we also have to make sure that we have the credit available for families to get into the housing market, not so they go, you know, underwater, but so that they can take advantage of that housing stock that would come on the market once again. This would also lower the prices of those units, which have gone up 85% in the last 6 years, so making them somewhat more affordable.
You know, Tom Callahan said something to me that I found intriguing, that many people might be surprised that in a state like Massachusetts, with its progressive traditions, there's such a wide racial gap when it comes to home ownership. Is he right about that? In other words, as stark as that division is here, are we doing better than other parts of the country, or what's your perspective on that?
I haven't studied the country, and I don't know how this compares with, let's say, some southern cities where there's still more racism than we have here in some cases. But I think the problem is it's a legacy that goes back and it gets built up decade over decade. And it's going to take, unfortunately, more decades to unravel. The legacy of racism goes back a long time. And while we've made great progress, no doubt about that, there's still a lot to be done. And it shows up more clearly in the wealth distribution that you talked about and in the Fed study than any place else.
Hmm. I want to ask you about the federal role, because a part of this series that we're doing, A Nation Engaged, is sort of inspired by the fact that this is an election year and we're asking, what can be done to increase the wealth of all Americans. Do the feds have a role here? I mean, once upon a time, we thought about the feds having a role in public housing, but the sense that I get is not so much anymore.
Well, the feds have always played a major role, particularly after World War II with the GI Bill, which is really what put most people in their homes, or many people in their homes. And, of course, they also underwrite most mortgages through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the two large mortgage underwriters. I don't know how much more the feds can actually do to encourage it. At the low end, they encourage it through housing vouchers and through tax subsidies for builders to build affordable housing. The real question is whether they could extend that up a bit in order to be able to also provide some subsidies for builders to build middle-income housing. Right now, I don't see much, appetite for that, but perhaps we'll see that in the future.
All right. Well, that's Barry Bluestone, professor of political economy at Northeastern University and the founding director of the Dukakis Center for Urban and Regional Policy. Barry, always a pleasure. Thank you very much. And listeners, you can find a link to that study on the wealth gap from the Boston Federal Reserve at radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.